Hello and welcome to the opening bell. My name is Matt Christie and my boxing news colleague John Denon is sat opposite me. John, it seems like ages since you and I did this.
We've been apart for so long, Matt.
We have. You did it without me last week.
I know. I can't believe you left and now I've grown up.
I was at Glastonbury Festival. I've just about got over that. It is good to be back in reality after a few days in the field. So let's talk about what happened last week. I have since watched the main...
At Glastonbury or...
Pardon?
At Glastonbury or in boxing?
Boxing.
All right, you don't want to talk about Glastonbury for a while.
I'd love to talk about Glastonbury. We're on a bit of a tight schedule, aren't we?
I've only ever been to one music festival.
That was the Green Man in 2010. I remember it well.
It was...
Mumford and Sons were playing, weren't they? You're not keen.
Good anyway, pizzas, though.
Anyway, let's talk about boxing. Timothy Bradley was probably... The Bradley-Vargas fight was one of the main points of contention. There's a good bill as well in Liverpool. Let's briefly talk about Timothy Bradley. Let's get straight to it. Bradley was controlling things. About 15 seconds to go, he took the punch of the fight and he wobbled. With 7 seconds to go, the referee made a right meal of things, separated the fighters thinking it was the end of the fight. Vargas thought he was separating the two fighters because he was stopping it in Vargas' favour.
Pandemonium
reigned.
Know what was going on.
Bradley didn't know what was going on. Okay, first of all, obviously the referee made a really, really bad error at a really, really bad point of the fight. However, do you think that that error had a bearing on the outcome?
I don't think Vargas was about to stop Tim Bradley. I think he'd hurt him and rocked him and had him going, but we know Bradley's tough. You know, think of his war with Provodnikov. Vargas was chasing after him, trying to finish him off. I don't think he caught him with any of those follow-up attacks. You know, so Bradley hadn't even touched down yet, so I just don't think with 7 seconds left, Vargas would have got him out of there. But the referee did go mental.
We don't know. Obviously, we never know in boxing. Boxing is so unpredictable, so subjective. Vargas could well have landed a Hail Mary shot that would have forced an intervention or forced the end of the fight. It may have happened. However, as you say, I remember Bradley rocking and rolling, I think, in the third round against Ruslan Provodnikov, and he looked in far more trouble than that. Also, he saw out a really rocky last round against Provodnikov. Provodnikov, we know, is devastating finisher, massive puncher. Vargas, I believe, going in, has got less than a 50% KO ratio. He's not known for his punching power, is he?
That was a great shot he caught him with, but is it enough to justify a rematch when, frankly, Bradley was winning it handily? Bradley is really good, and he's particularly, like you say, he's a particularly good survivor as well when he's in trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
And Bradley, for me, had been winning, you know, had been clocking up the rounds, dominating the fight, really, up until that point. I'm not desperate to see a rematch. I'd rather see Bradley in, like, a more meaningful title fight.
I don't think I want to see a rematch either, but from Vargas's point of view and from a sporting point of view and in the terms of fairness, does Vargas deserve a rematch given that his shot, really, this was his shot really breaking into the big leagues, was curtailed prematurely when he had his fighter, he had his opponent in real trouble?
Maybe, but you know, maybe you should have just double checked what the referee was saying.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not celebrated. Vargas scores
fault.
A goal, but they're really offside and they run off celebrating.
It's all Vargas' fault, the absolute moron. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, all right.
Okay, let's move on. Let's move on to the Liverpool show. Rocky Fielding and Callum Smith looked good by all accounts. I'll be honest. As a consequence of Glastonbury, the only fight I have watched back so far is Bradley Vargas. I've seen highlights of Smith and I've seen highlights of Fielding. What's your perception of these guys now?
You know, I Rocky Fielding surprised me. Maybe I've been too down on him over the recent year or few months, because I thought he was going to have his hands full with Brian Vera, given that Brian Vera should have got a decision over Chavez Jr. in their first fight. I thought Brian Vera was going to be a real handful, and Rocky Fielding just took him out. And then Callum Smith, I mean, dominate Rabras the way he did. That's a really solid win. I think Rabras is pretty good, and it's just the right fight for Callum Smith to sort of carry on as, you know, blue chip prospect and future world champion.
Was Rocky Fielding ultimately too big for Brian Vera? I've seen a lot of this, that Brian Vera is no super middleweight, but he which is true, he's a career middleweight. But he did fight Julio Cesar Chavez at a high weight and equipped himself quite well. I think perhaps people have been a bit unfair on Fielding, say just it was simply a case of him being too big.
Yeah, I think it's hard to sort of dismiss the win. And there was some refereeing chaos at the end of Vera Fielding as well. It's not a good weekend for referees.
Other people on the bill of note: Martin Murray, Tony Bellew. Are they both world-class fighters?
Yeah, as in world-class in the sense that you can see them deserving world title shots. But will either of them become world champions? Could be hard in both of their respective weight divisions. But yeah, I think Murray is very good. Obviously, Tony Bellew for a long time was caught between two weights. I think it's going to be hard to win a world title at cruiserweight. But, you know, I'd like to see Tony Bellew in a world title fight before he carries on as a movie star.
It's true. We found out when that film's out yet, Creed? Because I'm getting increasingly excited by the prospect of it.
I haven't even seen the trailer.
I haven't. But anything loosely to do with Rocky Balboa is going to be absolutely brilliant, right?
You know, I'm more into documentaries. It'll be all right. It's just after Rocky IV, it's all going to be downhill from there.
No, Rocky V, I think, took a marked step back. However,
that one where he's old, come on, that's pretty boring.
I enjoyed that.
He has a good line in it, and it's got the guy from Heroes in it, but
I enjoyed that one. That one was called Rocky Balboa, wasn't it? I really enjoyed that one. Okay, so in this week's issue, the front cover is graced by Carl Froch. And if you guys out there haven't seen it yet, I urge you to get a copy of this week's issue.
It's your questions. It's our readers' questions.
Exactly. We threw some of the... I mean, we put it out there on our social media channels to ask Carl Froch any question you liked, really, within reason. We did have, obviously, there's a few crazy people out there. We did get a few rather distasteful responses, but the good ones and even some of the bizarre ones we asked to Carl, and he answered them all. And the results are in this week's issue, and it really is an insight into Carl Froch the man and Carl Froch the fighter.
Yes, it is brilliant.
It's fascinating. And actually, just before we came in to record this conversation, I just answered the phone, and it was Carl Froch saying his mom was most impressed and can I send him some extra copies, please? So we're going to do that as soon as we get off, as soon as we finish recording the podcast. We're going to send some copies over to Carl Froch and his family. What was your favourite question?
My favourite question?
Or what was your favourite answer?
I don't know. There's a lot. It's all good. I like the fact he says that from a young age, I knew no one could knock me out. And like watching James Bond films, seeing people being pistol whipped and being knocked out, and him thinking, "Oh yeah, no, that wouldn't work on me."
He's a complex, interesting, entertaining. Whatever your opinion on Carl Froch, he's always an entertaining guy to interview. But I think from a boxing fan's perspective, is there are things in there. He goes in depth about things like James DeGale, about his future. Also talks rather openly about that now infamous conversation with Floyd Mayweather. Yeah. That was on Sky over in Las Vegas before Mayweather went to war. Well, went to war, perhaps pushing it a bit, but fought Manny Pacquiao. He talks about all that, talks about whether or not he's going to fight Gennady Golovkin. Even goes back to his amateur days and names his toughest opponents there, the hardest punch he's ever taken, answers questions about his brother. It really is good stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's some of the sort of, you know, more left field questions. Then they kind of get good answers. You see a different side to a person if they're sort of asked something weird.
It seems, and it seemed to me while I was asking him these questions, and as I kind of allude to in the column this week, is that the Carl, you never quite know which Carl Froch you're going to get when you speak to him, and you can also kind of glean a lot from what might be about to happen when you speak to Carl Froch, in terms of if you speak to him before a fight, you can get an idea as to, and 9 times out of 10 he was, as to whether or not he's absolutely psyched and he's going to win the fight, how well his preparation has gone and what have you. And I must admit, from this conversation, what I got was he's probably not going to fight again.
Yeah.
Would it be a surprise to you if this was the end? Or perhaps a better question is, if he is to fight again, and he's already openly said, rightly or wrongly, that James DeGale doesn't motivate him, who do you think that he would come back and fight?
Well, if it actually happens. Yeah, because yeah, I think it's been going on, the sort of wait for him to decide, it's been going on for so long that the longer it goes on, the more likely he's just not going to fight again. Because, you know, he has been out for a year, and coming back after that length of time straight into a fight with Gennady Golovkin would be pretty tough. So if it's not Golovkin, if he's not up for DeGale, Chavez Jr. is, you know, is lost, so probably isn't as appealing an opponent. You know, even for that big Las Vegas fight, though, that would have been, that would have been good, because that, you know, that would have been a good sort of, they both would have got, that would have been just been a fight, and kind of a good one for him to sign off his career on. But if that's out the window, who is he going to make big money against to come back? You know, maybe Bernard Hopkins, but again, that won't be a great fight to watch, but it'll be sort of a massive name, so maybe useful in terms of his like legacy. But he's also at a stage where he's got nothing really left to prove.
I think it's interesting what you said at the start there, in that, you know, he wouldn't come back perhaps after a year out and fight Gennady Golovkin, but I think it would have to be a fight of that. I mean, perhaps Golovkin doesn't even bring that magnitude in terms of what Froch wants, although to the hardcore fan it absolutely would be a dream matchup. But it is. I mean, even if he was to announce today that he's coming back, chances are it wouldn't be till, if he's going to do a full training camp, what, September, October? So that's you're approaching 2 years out of the ring.
Yeah.
Is that right? Have I done my maths right?
Wait, no. So he fought May. Sorry, he fought May.
May. So you're approaching 18 months out of the ring.
Yeah. So
which at 38 years old.
Yeah.
It's a long time out, isn't it? So I am leaning towards the fact that we probably won't see him in a ring again. If that is the case, how much of a miss to British boxing is it? And is it a bit of a shame that pretty much, I mean, outside of perhaps Amir Khan, you could make an argument for someone like Anthony Joshua, there's not that many household names in British boxing. It's taken him pretty much all his career to get there. It's, even Calzaghe got there late, but he still had 3 or 4 fights at the end where he enjoyed that status. Froch, you could argue, didn't get it until he knocked out George Groves a second time.
Arguably, yeah. But I feel like Butte was a big fight.
Yeah.
And I feel that sort of took him to the, sort of the star level, sort of his name to the star level in the UK. So it's, you could say sort of the last, you know, Kessler rematch, Groves 1 and Groves 2. Those were his only sort of big fights as like a star name. But it's taken him so long to get to the top. It's a shame. that he doesn't, there isn't more time left to kind of enjoy his moment in the spotlight. But then, you know, he is 38 years old, and that is, you know, for a boxer, that is retirement age.
Do you think he's going to fight again?
No, I don't. Because I was thinking he's so competitive, he's bound to fight again. But now, I don't know. I don't think so. He might not announce his retirement. He might not be sort of intending to never box again. But then we just might find ourselves 2 or 3 years down the line, and he hasn't fought, so he's kind of gone away.
Yeah. He's kind of gone away. Yeah,
it's a shame. It's a bit, you know, it's good. You know, it'd be great to see him in a couple more fights. It'd be great to see him sort of, you know, making the most of the sort of level he's now at.
I've read a few bits and bobs where people are of the opinion that he did not look good in the first Groves fight, and this is me playing devil's advocate here. He didn't look good in the first Groves fight, and was his age was perhaps exposed somewhat in that first fight. Didn't really look good in the second one, and was saved by that one sensational punch. Do you go along with that? Did you see deterioration in Karl Froch, or do you think that's
I disagree with that. I think he didn't. I agree he didn't look good in the first Groves fight, but then maybe he wasn't. You know, maybe he did take him lightly and was caught by that massive right hand right in the first round, and that was a real shock. I actually thought he was pretty good I thought he was really good actually in the second Groves fight. It was close until Froch knocked him out, but I thought he was boxing, you know, a very intelligent fight, you know, looked pretty sharp. And Groves was really good. I thought they were both really good, actually. You know, Groves hasn't looked as good, I don't think, since that fight. But Groves is, you know, he's another world-class fighter. So I think that was, you know, I think that was a great performance in the second fight. Maybe not as exciting as some of the wars he'd had, because it was a bit cagey until the sort of finishing blow. But, you know, he's probably boxed one of his smarter fights.
Given your amateur connections and what have you, you've probably got the closest out of all of us on the team, the closest relationship with Robert McCracken. You spoke to him, certainly not in the last few weeks, but I think you spoke to him in the last few months. What was your perception of what Robert McCracken was thinking Froch was going to do?
Well, McCracken was saying that it was like 50-50 whether Froch was going to come back, so I think that's exactly what Karl Froch himself has been saying publicly. But McCracken sounded quite positive about the idea of the Golovkin fight, so he must have been really confident that Froch would win that fight if it happened. So this was like, it was before the European Games that I last spoke to him, so he seemed more positive about the Golovkin fight, if he was going to fight again, than I was expecting. But it was still 50-50.
And incidentally, he does say this week, and he explains why, but Froch does say that it is still 50-50 as to whether or not he's going to, he would fight Gennady Golovkin, and he explains why the percentage, explains exactly why the percentage isn't a bit higher than that. But if you haven't seen it, and love him or hate him, I think you will enjoy, there's a lot to enjoy in that feature. And I do like the idea of the readers giving the questions, because sometimes we can look at it perhaps a little bit too boxing wise, if you know what I mean. We can go a little bit too deep into the world of boxing, but really when readers get involved, they do come out with some wonderful questions, and I think you will see a few more of these type of features with some big names over the coming months. We've been only talking for about 20 minutes. I'm afraid it is a short one this week, but at least we've done it.
At least you survived Glastonbury.
At least I survived Glastonbury. I tell you what. When I came back, I didn't think I was going to. I thought, no, I know. I'm not going to go live in a field.
All right.
But yeah, no, it is. It's good to be back in reality. But we'll be back next week, hopefully with a longer podcast for you to get your teeth into. There are some bigger fights approaching, so we'll go into those at length. But as always, thanks very much for listening. Thanks for your continued support. It's always, always sincerely appreciated. Have a good weekend, folks, and we'll be back next week.